This is Phil Farron. And I am driving home. It's Thursday today. This will be a little shorter today. I'm having to back up because I'm in the Walmart parking lot. Because I had to pick up a prescription for my beloved. Because she is sick. Sick. Looks like at this point it might be a sinus infection, although we weren't sure there for a while. We didn't know if it was like something that was highly contagious or just moderately contagious, so I've actually been sleeping downstairs for the last few nights, which isn't ideal because I like to sleep with my beloved. But keeps me healthy and going to work and billing. That's kind of an important thing. So, ta-da. Anyway, I stopped in a Walmart, got her some medicine, and hopefully this will knock out the sinus infection. She gets these every once in a while, and apparently the allergy season is in full swing right now, so... She said she hadn't been having that much trouble with drainage, but something has gotten in, and apparently it's not good. So anyways, hopefully that's going to get taken care of. All is well. Doing read-throughs at this point. Have the basics of the book cover worked out, so I just need to get the read-throughs done. My hard deadline for having the book... order in for the beta copies would be September 18th. That means that theoretically I get my read-throughs done this weekend, although I'm losing Friday because I'm going to go into work tomorrow since I was off on Monday. So I'm losing Friday, but theoretically I get my read-throughs done this weekend. And then I start layout on Monday or Tuesday. Get the layout done a couple of nights. That goes pretty quickly. Then I find out how many pages it actually is so I can build the actual cover. And then I order my proof copy. And that will take... I'll probably overnight it, rush ship it, so that will take several days. And then I order the 40 copies and start trying to find people who are interested in reading it. So, yeah, we're a little tight on time, but I think we're gonna make it. We'll see. I really would like to have this beta by the time we celebrate our 25th, which is... the next weekend. Our 25th wedding anniversary is the 24th of September. So, anyways, so life is good. Things are bettering along. Getting work done. It's good. Got to get to the topic today because shortened amount of time. I heard a TED talk that intrigued me. It was called The Voices in My Head, and it was a young woman named Eleanor Longden, I think is her last name. She told a very interesting story, and as I listened to it, I tried to kind of figure out, okay, how does this fit with my whole philosophy here of the fact of my framework that there are voices talking to us all the time. There is the voice of life, and there's the voice of destruction, and God is constantly whispering to us if we have the ears to hear it. And the flesh is constantly trying to nudge us. And my first interpretation upon listening to her did not end up being my last interpretation. So, I don't know. Here we go. We'll talk about it. Eleanor goes to university. Very exciting time for her. She'd made it to university. She said if you would have just looked at me on the outside, she said you would have assumed that I was a person who had it together. You know, she said that I was this feisty, energetic personality of lecture going and traffic cone stealing. She said, however, that really was just a veneer. She said, although it was very well crafted and a convincing one, she said it was just a veneer. She said, underneath, I was actually deeply unhappy, insecure, and fundamentally frightened. Frightened of other people, of the future, of failure, and of the emptiness that I felt within me. So that's the setup. So one day she's gathering up her books, and she's walking out of a classroom. And as she's walking out of this classroom, she hears a voice observe. She is leaving the room. And she said there was, she heard it with such clarity that she actually looked around to see if she could see who was talking to her. There was no one. She said, I was fairly shaken by the time I got back. She said, I left my books on the stairs and hurried home. And there she heard it again. She is opening the door. And she said, from there on out, for quite a while, she had this narrator that was with her all the time. She is going to the library. She is going to a lecture. She said, it almost got to the place where it was fairly reassuring, this voice. She said, it typically was not strident, it was calm. She said, sometimes it would reflect my emotional state. But, she said, mostly it was just an impassive narrator. She said it was about that time that she made a fatal mistake. She told her friend about the voice, and her friend was horrified. That led to an appointment and what she calls a subtle conditioning process. The implication that normal people don't hear voices, and the fact that I did, meant that something very serious was wrong. So she said she was talking to her college GP, general practitioner, I would guess, about what she perceived to be the problem, anxiety, low self-worth, fears about the future, blah, 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 blah. And the GP was uninterested until she mentioned the voices. At that point, the GP swiveled around and all of a sudden asked lots of questions. And she said, I always wish at this point the voice had said, she is digging her own grave. She said, because I was looking for attention, and so when the GP kept asking me about the voices, I kept telling them. What then begins is a downward slide, because everyone is telling her that there's something wrong with her. She begins to believe this. She is filled with fear. She's put on regimens and put on pills and admitted, and she said at this point, the voices begin to change, the voice in her begins to change, and it begins to give her a series of tasks. She said, essentially, she said she had begun an aggressive stance towards her own mind, a kind of psychic civil war. And this, in turn, caused the number of voices to increase and to grow progressively hostile and menacing. She said, helplessly and hopelessly, I began to retreat into this nightmarish inner world in which the voices, plural, were destined to become both my persecutors and my only perceived companions. She said, at that point, the voices started to give her tasks that she needed to do. Some of them started out simple. You need to pull out 3 strands of your hair. She said, culminating with, or not culminating, but in addition to things like, you see that tutor over here, over there, you see that glass of water, well, you have to go over and pour it over him in front of the other students. And she said, and I did. And she said she just spiraled downward and downward and downward until she finally got in touch with some people that actually started helping her, that actually helped her disconnect from all the fear and the anxiety. And she goes on to describe a process now where she still hears the voices. But she said, I recognize that the voices are a reflection of what my emotional states are. And she said, if I'm concerned about something and I hear that voice, she said, if I'm afraid of something and I hear that voice, her approach now is to talk to that voice and let it know there's not anything to be afraid of, that everything's fine. To try to understand where that voice is coming from. Let me see if I can find her exact quote about... here it is. So when the voices warned me not to leave the house, then I would thank them for drawing my attention to how unsafe I felt, because if I was aware of it, then I could do something positive about it. But go on to reassure both them and myself that we were safe and didn't need to feel frightened anymore. She said, throughout all of this, what I would ultimately realize was that each voice was closely related to aspects of myself, and that each one of them carried overwhelming emotions that I had never had the opportunity to process or resolve, memories of sexual trauma and abuse, of anger, shame, guilt, and low self-esteem. She eventually, with the help of many people, was able to extricate herself from the drugs and the psychological confinement and all those things. And 10 years after the first voice came to her, she graduated. She said, this time, with the highest degree in psychology the university had ever given, and 1 year later, the highest master's, she said, which isn't bad for a madwoman. She said, in fact, one of the voices actually dictated the answers during the exam. She said, which might technically count as cheating. So she is actually a part of a society of people who hear voices. She works with people who hear voices. And she's trying to destigmatize this quality that some people have where they hear voices. And she connects it very much to their emotional well-being. Excuse me. And connects it to where they are in their emotional state, and that's where she starts. And she actually had a psychologist that had told her, which I thought was a really good thing to tell her when she was kind of down near the bottom of all this. She had a psychologist that told her, hang on a minute, I can't find it. I don't know. The essence of it was when she came in to talk to him, she said, listen, don't tell me about what everyone else has said is wrong with you. Tell me about you. And through those processes of working with people who weren't ringing an alarm bell and shouting fear at her and all those things, she was able actually to come to the place where she could function in life. And she still hears voices, but everything's fine. Now, I will tell you, when I first listened to that, as soon as she said she heard voices in her head, you know, I jumped on the bandwagon of, okay, are they the flesh? Are they the spirit? What are they? Blah, 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 blah. And it was only after I had listened to the TED Talk a second time as I was making my notes did I realize that she is talking about a process that what starts out as one fairly impassive voice it could very well be a response to the trauma in her life. Something else sneaks in on top of that, and the voice becomes voices. And the voices then that she hears begin to fuel this fear, this desperation. And the more those voices fuel it, the more she meditates on it, the more hold they have over her life, to the point where they begin then to be able to get her to do destructive things. So in listening to all of this, I think where this fits in my little framework, since, you know, to the man with a hammer, all the world's a nail, I think where this fits in my little framework is that, in fact, there is a physiological / emotional phenomenon in life that people can hear voices, that different parts of their brain can be firing off for different types of things. But there still seems to me that there is another phenomenon, that what is happening inside all those voices is that if you begin to listen to those voices, if you begin to listen to those voices inside or outside of you, who are condemning, who are shame-filled, who are fear-filled, that what happens is it gives the flesh a toehold. And then the flesh starts manifesting voices to us. And it's very difficult when we get to that compromised situation to be able to discern the two. Now, what I find interesting is that the mechanisms that she used to help her with these voices, I'm backing into my garage, the mechanism that she used to help her with those voices was to stop, take a pause, decide what she's actually thinking and feeling, put a voice to it, and then go forward from there. Those are the same types of mechanisms that I use when the flesh is attempting to get me to be fearful about something. I direct my speech typically to God when that happens. I do things like say, God, I thank you that you have always been with me. I thank you that no matter what happens this day, you are going to be with me and you will love me as much at the end of this day as you love me right now, no matter what happens. That's a mechanism whereby we are exposing and bringing light to all that rattle and shake and creaking that's going on with fearful voices. And she's doing exactly the same thing. When the voices tell her to be afraid, she can't go out of the house, she tells her voices, well, thank you that for reminding me that, you know, life is unsafe, but we're okay and we're going to be okay. And I think what that diffuses then is that diffuses the effort of the flesh to use this natural phenomenon that's going on inside her head. So I thought it was a very interesting talk. And of course, as I'm listening to it, I'm thinking, so does this just explain some of the voices that I have in my head? I mean, you know, is it just me talking to myself? And that's one of those questions that I don't think I'm ever going to answer until I get to heaven and see what the thing is. But I'm telling you, it's extremely useful to identify these feelings and these notions within me as either flesh or spirit. Because even if it is just me, it helps me keep those in check that would lead me to destruction. And that's one thing that I think becomes very clear when you start hearing about her story, that those additional voices that start rising up now are no longer passive. They're no longer unemotive. Now, they're no longer simply narrating what she's doing. Now they are focused on getting her to destruction. And I think at that point it becomes very clear, oh, okay, the flesh is motivating this. But anyways, it was interesting, fun stuff. I am home. I'm in my garage. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.